welcome to another episode of Geeky Radio. I'm Tino Magnetta. And today I have an amazing guest, someone who has paved the way for tribes for over 20 years, Mr. Bruce Bozen. Welcome, Bruce.
Well, hello, Tino. And I like the sound of me already, a paver. I always consider myself sort of a concrete kind of guy, but a paver's good, too. Thanks for that welcome.
Pavers are
but,
good.
But, you know, I'm a lucky guy. Sorry.
You are. You're a very lucky guy. A lot of people don't know, and we were just talking about that because we got on before the show. Where did you get, because it's Bruce Two Dogs Bozen, right? Where did you get that name?
That was given to me by Slow Turtle. He was a Wampanoag medicine man, a supreme medicine man, sort of like the Pope in Indian countries on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I had my two Labradors at a naming ceremony, and he called me Nishnatea, Two Dogs.
And that stuck.
And that's it. I kept it. I've always had two dogs in my life. I do now, too.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. And you actually use that in your, whenever you have something. And I've noticed that you actually use it. So that's an honor to be to have that bestowed on you, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, most people call me Two Dogs or Dogs. I've been called a few other things, but I can't mention that on the radio. But it's all good.
So tell us, we were talking a little bit about this, because you guys didn't really have an official res, right? You have like a half acre, you were saying, or an acre? Whereabouts did you grow up?
I grew up in Uncasville, where the casino is. Uncasville is named after Uncas. That's 13 generations back, grandfather from me, and homegrown in the town where Mohegans live. And we're, you know, everybody was raised there. That's our place.
And so how big was the tribe? How big the tribe?
Oh, well, right now the tribe is probably close to 2,400. I mean, we've gone up and down. We go back to when every man was fighting in the war. The numbers were down in Uncasville because they were doing, their census going around, but they were wondering where all the Mohegans were, but they were all fighting in the war, helping this country to fight a war. Mm. So it's gone up and down. It was down to 700, it was 1,200, but it's been growing for the past 20 years, which is beautiful.
So the Mohicans were a very large presence in the war, right?
We were every war since the Civil War we've fought in.
Wow, that's amazing. What was it like growing up?
Defended this country.
Tell me a little bit about those times.
Well, see, growing up in Uncasville, with my mother, and there were seven kids. My father, they were divorced, and he lived in Groton, but, did his visitation. We spent weekends with him. It wasn't easy, Back then, if you go back to the 1960s, early 70s, to be an Indian wasn't welcomed, even in our own town, really, at that time. You kind of hate to say it, but people throw rocks at you. Things have changed a lot. So
wow.
It wasn't easy being Mohegan then. It's not easy. It's not easy probably still for a lot of people. It's getting easier to walk this world in two different sets of shoes. You have to be proud of who you are, your Mohegan side, but you also have to walk on the other side too. But it was tough.
So it was really bad. There was a lot of segregation and a lot of racism, right, against the tribes.
Yeah, there always was, and that's a shame. Things are getting better all around the world, as far as that goes. And, it just takes time. It's an education thing is what it is more than anything. Educate people on who you are, then they understand.
What do you mean by that? What kind of message do they need to understand?
Just let them know. We're no different. We bleed the same way. We're people just like you are. We're not here to fight to start a war. We all want to get along. That's why Mohegans are still here. All these years later, the 13 tribes in Connecticut are extinct, gone because of war, conflict. We didn't do that. Uncas was a wise man. He taught us survival. He wanted to see 13 generations be alive, which we are today. And that's what we do today is look ahead 13 generations to make sure that we will still be alive. And our great-great-great-great-grandchildren will be here.
So you're saying that his strategy was a lot different than the other tribes that are extinct? Explain that a little bit.
Yeah, he was a very wise man. You know, he always put his people first. You know, he saw that. Yeah, I'll give you some of the stories of Uncas. You know, he saw that when other tribes or white men were coming and there was a war, a battle, and we're fighting, you know, they outgunned us. They had ways to pretty much eliminate us. And he said, you know what, this conflict is going to wipe out our entire tribe. There'll be no more Mohicans. We're all going to be gone, you know, so let's try to get along. And he found a way to make peace, work with the allies. And that's why we're all here today.
Wow, what kind of a man was he? Where did he come from? I mean, what was his? Why was he so wise?
Because he's related to me.
Well, he was, right?
Yeah, yes, he was. Well, you know, it was in his blood. You know, I'm sure his parents and grandparents, it was all passed down. And, you know, he put his people first. He thought about what was important, you know. Was it now? Was it the time now? Was it the next 10 years, 20 years? Or was it looking so far ahead like his ancestors taught him? You know, look so far ahead that you make sure that your people. Yeah.
So you guys basically owe your survival to one man or a generation of wise people.
Always have been and always will be.
That's very, very interesting. So you said there were, what, 13, 14 other tribes basically extinct, gone?
Yeah, in Connecticut alone, there's 13 that are extinct. They're just completely gone from disease, war, and, you know, a few of us survived. We're still here, but you know what? I think about some of these tribes. Who's to say the Podunk weren't the ones who would have found a cure for cancer, but maybe they had it. Maybe there was a plant that they had that we'll never know about. I mean, you could go on and on.
Wow.
And think about a million different things, but it's sad.
Yeah. How big were those tribes? Would you say the 13, 14 tribes altogether, how many people are we talking here?
We're probably talking thousands. Thousands and thousands.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. So was the tribe, the Mohican tribe, are they originally from there, or did they move into that area?
No, we traveled up from the south 700 and something years ago, Lenni Lenape, first people. And, you know, we stopped in Connecticut and saw the tidal flowing river and all the shellfish that was right there off the shore and how great the hunting was, and we settled here.
Interesting. So tell us a little bit about some of those life lessons that you got from the elders. What kind of stuff? When you say, you know, you mentioned that he related to you, and that's why he was wise. What were those, some of those lessons? You know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, most of the lessons come from my mother and father. You know, they just try to get you through life as a kid. And, you know, even at my age, my mother will still get after me for doing things that she doesn't think is right. And I still listen. My grandmother, my grandfather, my father, you know, they were the best ones to have there. You know, it was the best crystal ball anybody could ever want. And then you have people like Chief Ralph Sturgis. You know, God bless his soul. He was another great guy, another wise man. We've had leaders on our council since federal recognition. And you know, it's very weird, Tino, when I got elected and I watch all these people come on the tribal council and they get elected, and it's a natural effect of what is right and what is wrong. We know the difference, and it's in our blood. It's hard to explain. When I see it happen, it happened to me, and it happens to everybody that gets elected. It's amazing.
Interesting. What specifically would you attribute that to? What, philosophically, what are some of the specific philosophical, you know, lessons? Is it to cooperate? Is it to, you know, pick your battles? What are some of the major life lessons that they taught you?
Yeah, that's you know, the perseverance, the integrity, and the honor of the tribe. Those three words right there mean a lot to everybody in the tribe. So, you know, never give up. Persevere. It just stick with it. These are words from Chief Ralph Sturgis. The honor, you know, just remember who you are, where you came from, what it took to get to where we are today, and honor all that and honor the ancestors that fought, that worked, that did everything they could to get us there.
Those are the best lessons.
Big
battle.
It's in our blood. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
But it's like I said, it's so weird because I can see it. It's in everybody's blood. It's just an automatic reaction. It's an automatic feeling that we all have. It's amazing to see. Yeah, it's hard. I couldn't even put it in words if I had to. But I see it and I feel it when I'm around everybody.
It's just a legacy from the elders and from how you guys survived and all that stuff.
It is. And you know what? When the going is tough, you know, we all come together. We get through it. We don't throw stones. We make great things happen for our people. We put everybody first. We put our people first and make sure that we're going to be here 13 generations later. And guess what? 10 generations from now, it's going to be somebody else's job to make sure that 13 generations ahead, we're still going to be here.
Yeah, that's a big thing, isn't it? Just to avoid becoming extinct like those other 13 tribes.
Yeah, that's... That is it. That is what is important.
Yeah. So your roots are right from the beginning in Mohican Sun. We were chatting a little bit. You were chairman for 8 years, on the council for 5, I think, and started the Bingo Hall. Tell us a little bit about the beginning, you know, in the Bingo Hall and how that got into Mohican and you know, how it all came about.
Yep. So I was lucky to be part of the crew that actually built Mohegan Sun. I worked on the construction, which, you know, I'm glad I did that because I could see how it operates from the ground up. I could see every little piece of how the operation should be running, what the mechanics are of the building, because that's important too. You know, once that construction was done, I had a job in our Bingo Hall, and the Bingo Hall opened up the same time as the original casino, phase one. So it was all one big opening.
Mm.
So I worked there for a few years, and then I was lucky. The elders gave me a job to do something that I'm very passionate about, to work in our cultural programs department, to, you know, think about having a job where you get to sing, dance, and make regalia all day, something you love to do. It wasn't really a job as far as I'm concerned, but it was the best job in the world. And from there, I was elected on the council for a year, and then the following year I was elected again for a 4-year term, and I was nominated for chairman. And I did 2 terms as chairman and then another term as a board member. So I've seen everything from the ground up. I got to learn every little piece of the business, and I was hands-on. It was like the most amazing experience in the world.
So you started in the Bingo Hall?
Yes. When it opened up, I started in the Bingo Hall. I did.
What was that like?
That was so much fun. It's kind of funny when I look back now because I was offered the job there. I was like, really? Bingo? You know, I was kind of young then. But once it started, I was like, oh, my God, this is a great place. I've never had so much fun. It was a great place. Like, I met some really nice people. And it was every night was a different game being played or something was happening. The excitement was always there. It was not what I expected, but another great job, a great stepping stone to get me to where I was. Loved it.
What made it so great?
Just being in the casino, because it's all in one building. So all the energy of Mohegan Sun, Mohegan Sun Bingo, the patrons. When you have thousands, you know, tens of thousands of people coming through a facility every day, and they love coming there, and they come back, and they return, and they come up, and they look at you, and they thank you for, you know, being a Mohegan and what you put in the area. I mean, here we are in Uncasville, Connecticut, and we put a world-class billion-dollar casino in the middle of our town, and it's been successful since that day. You know, it's one of those great places that we open the doors, and we've never really had a bad day, you know. It's just been, we did it right. The future, I mean, everything we had that world-changing startup. You know, it's one of those places, I guess you'd call it our world change. So it was a world-changing startup, and it's been successful since day one. We didn't realize how successful it would be. And, you know, me having people come around all day and tell me how great it was when I'm working in the Bingo Hall and then in the cultural department, and still today, I run into people that have been coming for 20 years, and they still think of it as a day one, like they're still excited when they walk in the door. That's a great feeling.
Yeah, that's what an accomplishment. The funds that, before you opened the casino, I'm sure there was a lot of need for infrastructure and for, and we hear this from most native casinos. What did those funds allow your people to do? Because I think a lot of people think of casinos just as corporate entities, but for the Native Nations, it was completely different, right? Those funds did a lot. What did it allow the tribe to do?
Well, the funds that are generated from the casino now, if that's what you're talking about, we make sure that our tribal members have the best health, best educations. You know, we take care of that first. That's our main concern as far as the tribe goes. We want to make sure that we have the brightest, the best, most educated, the healthiest. I mean, like I told you, our numbers are growing. We had 700-800 people. Now it's up to almost 2,400. Our elders are living longer. We're all healthier now because of our, all the money that we invest into their health plans, keep them all healthy. So that's what I think of most tribes do. It's, I think they're reinvesting in their people. And that's a great investment.
There's a desperate need for that too, right? Especially at that time.
Oh yeah, at that time, yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, your school's paid for it. If you're sick, if you need a heart transplant, if you're a baby that's born with a bad heart, that's covered. We take care of that. And above and beyond that, we are corporate citizens too. So we do a lot of work out in the general too. We're on a lot of charities. We do a lot of fundraising. We want to see this entire state. This is our home, Connecticut. We want to make sure that we can help everybody that we can.
Yeah, not just the tribe, but the whole community, right?
Yep.
So
yes,
not a lot of people have experienced opening a casino this magnitude and having it reach the success that it reached. The day that casino was open, explain that feeling.
The day the casino opened. Oh, my God. Probably the biggest day in all of our lives. The day it opened, I think we all stood there with our mouths on the floor going, oh, my God. We didn't expect to be this successful in day one. In the first 4 hours, we were swamped, and it didn't end for the longest time.
We deluged, right? So many people.
So it was just incredible. So the leaders then had to, pull the trigger quick to get the next phase of the building started.
Mm-hmm.
And the market still, there still was enough there to fill the place still in phase two.
Phase three, on and on.
And, we all, I think in the beginning, we all just kept looking at it every day and thinking, my God, what have we done? Look at this beautiful place. This is the nicest place.
Kind of surreal, right?
But it is, and still today. Like, I can walk around today and see things in the Sky Casino, a little around the corner. It could be a lamp up by the ceiling or something that I've never seen. There's always something new to see there. And it looks brand new, which is probably one of the most important things, that I always thought was a good thing that we do, is keeping the investment on your property up to standard, your standard. Keeping it clean, keeping it safe, and that's probably one of the most important things a person wants to see when they come in the building, is maintaining that.
Yeah, absolutely. Bruce, we had a conversation the other day how things have really changed for the tribes in gaming since the beginning of the IGRAC, and we've spoken about this now. But, since the crash in 2008 and now we've come back quite a bit from that, there's a lot of competition going on, a lot of people expanding, a lot of new commercial licenses being granted. It's not the way it was when you first opened the casino. Tell us a little bit about how tribes should be thinking differently and also be diversifying for the competition that's coming in.
Well, everybody got past 2008. We all made it past that. And I think everybody's changed their way of thinking and how they run their business, not only in gaming, but probably around the whole country. You've had to modify a few things, but I think we'll have cleaned up enough things where their machine, their business, is running better tuned now than it ever has been. The market's never going to come back the way it was pre-2008. That's never going to be the same. You're never going to have that same sort of spend in any casino. That I still haven't seen it yet today. So that gets you to the point where tribes need to think about, you know, what's our next goal? Our geography? Is it the size of our place? What are our goals? What do we want to see for our people? How big is our tribe growing? What do we need to sustain our tribe for another 13 generations? And, you know, at that point, we need to take the time to make the right decisions, whether it's 13 generations or 6 generations. Each tribe is different. Get out there. There's another world out there. I look at Mohegan Sun and how successful it is. And I go, why? Because we have a great arena. We have great hotels. We have great retail. We have great gaming and some great restaurants. But it's spread out, and they're also spread out and so successful and good that we're getting that market. There's people that come to our casino just to go to the arena. There's people that come to go shopping. There's people that come just to spend a few days at the hotel, and they may not do anything else in the building, but you've got to think about that market and market them, recapture the ones who are gone. You know, I can tell you a good way to recapture your clientele who aren't there anymore. Maybe a little mail append email.
Yeah, that'll work. So you're thinking, if I hear what you're saying correct, is that you should what they need to be thinking about is how to market more aggressively, right?
Oh yeah, clean it up. You know, there was a day when you just sent everybody everything. Understand your customer. Know what each person likes. You know, dig in a little deeper. Don't give everybody, you know, a basket full of goods that they're never going to use. Find out what they like. You know, target that. If somebody's coming, they like. If it's a certain country show, make sure you reach out to them. Let them know, hey, your star guy is coming here. Would you like to come spend the night? You know, make it worth their while.
Right.
That's the best way to keep the casino running, keep it going, you know, because listen, we're sharing the pot now with everybody. I think there's casinos popping up all over the place. We're in a world right now here in Mohegan Sun. We've got New York. We've got, you know, Massachusetts. We've got Rhode Island now. We're surrounded by all new gaming. So we've been working on this for 10 years.
Right, getting ready. Getting ready for the year.
And we've modified. We've modified a lot. We've made it work.
It's great. You know, I don't think a lot of people understand how much running the casino is such a huge task. Tell us a little bit about what some of the hardest things that it takes to run. What are some of the hardest things that you see running a casino?
Well, you need to remember that you need to be hands-on. If you're not hands-on and you're running a casino, there are a lot of people in every business that sit up in an office and they don't get down there and they don't experience what they're trying to sell to the world themselves. Get down there, see what's going on, get your hands dirty, experience what somebody else is going to feel when they walk through the door. You know, walk through that other door, see what it looks like, feel how happy you feel when you walk through the door. And then, you know, and then trying to maintain that is hard because, you know, you have budget cuts. You have all these things. So this department says they need this. And then your finance people tell you can't afford that. So you're trying to balance money with a facility that you need to invest tens and hundreds of millions of dollars back into to make it the best and the brightest. But at the same time, if the money's not coming in, you're challenged every day. Like, all right, so let's go back to marketing. Let's sit down for a little while. How are we going to market this crowd? How are we going to bring this number up over here? What can we cut back over here without hurting our business? You know, you don't want to start cutting jobs. That's the worst thing you could do is when you cut jobs, and then you're hurting your property, I think. So reach out to all your employees, you know, get with them, let them help you decide what's best for your company. The people on the ground, your frontline people, they know how to do it just as well as anybody sitting in an office.
Yeah, you're a very hands-on guy, right? You'll you'll go right down onto the floor and do your thing, right? You're not.
I have. I've parked cars there. I've done everything there. I have experienced.
And that helps
job
you give a feel, like you said. You walk through the door, right? See how it feels. It gives you a real feel for what's going on, right?
That's right. Walk around, smell the air. Look at your customers. Look how happy they are. You know, if you see a, if I saw a group of sad people or mad people, I have no problem going over and asking, you know, asking them what's happening. Maybe I can fix it right there. But just, you know, hands on is real important. If you're not in the building, if you're not doing the job, then you really don't know.
And you got to juggle that with, like you said, budget cuts and, you know, maybe diminishing revenues in certain times is a balancing act, right?
Oh, every day is a balancing act. And, you know, it's hot and cold. You know, here we're in New England. We can get a few bad snowstorms, and guess what? Our budget's out the window. We have to act fast. One bad weekend is all we need.
Yeah, because that's a lot of revenue.
Oh, yeah. You know, let's just think of sometimes we've had big shows, a big act coming in, and there's a snowstorm, the roads are shut down. That's a big hit.
Wow. It's a big hit. Hey, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this whole, you know, every day now we're seeing people, you know, getting called out for the whole sexual harassment thing, the Me Too movement. How does this affect, does it affect women in Native Nations at all? Do you see this as a, as an issue that needs to be talked about, or how do you feel about all that?
You know, it's really a shame to hear and see just how bad it is every day. You know, there's another predator revealed on television, and there's a long list of victims that speak out. And it's, you know, it's not acceptable for any reason. You know, it's just, but it's everywhere. And you know what? I don't think it matters who you are, where you are. I think it's probably going to touch everybody, it seems. Every day when I watch the news, I see another person, another man, woman. It's going to be, it's growing. It's amazing. It's a shame. You know, it's a shame that anyone ever did what they did. But it's, you know, in Indian country, just like in any other place, you know, I don't think we're exempt from any issues or anything that wouldn't happen in the real world.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing. It's just a matter of opening up the dialogue and having people speak out and resolving the issues.
That's the way to do it. It can be fixed.
What does the next generation need to understand the most to help them for the future? What do they need to get from, you know?
Well, hopefully they have good leaders and they listen to their elders. You know, they need to see beyond the immediate future. And we've all worked hard to keep what our ancestors fought and worked hard for. And, we, you know, they should look within their own tribes and, you know, see what their tribe says as far as preserving how many generations. And they should remember that all tribes are investing in their future, their education. You know, so we're going to have a million great leaders someday in Indian country. I look at now, we're at what? It's been almost 30 years since the Indian Gaming Act was written. So we're at that point now where our kids are graduating college. They're getting degrees. You know, we're going to have some really bright leaders here coming up in the next 10 to 20 years. They are going to do it for all of us.
Yeah, it's definitely there's definitely a cycle of major change in the next generation, right?
Oh yeah, it's, you know, and there you go. It's the next generation, and those are the ones who are going to do it. And you know what? I can see it within my own tribe here. We have a lot of youth groups, a lot of things going on in our tribe, and we all sit in the room and we look at them and we just can't believe how intelligent, and how nice, and you know, it's like I can go home and say, look at these kids. We have nothing to worry about. We have a great future ahead of us.
It's a good feeling. It's a great feeling. So what are the next 50 years look like? You know, you can break them down if you want. But what do you see if you were to predict?
Well, yeah.
What do you see?
Well, we're in I think we're in year 29 of Indian gaming being alive and well. Next year will be 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I think everybody's up that's going to be up. There might be a few more opening here and there. You know, everybody's had their startup, their, you know, 5 years with their time to grow, and 5 to 10 years, their next level. And, you know, now it's the 10 to 20 year, everybody's perfected. Now what are we going to do? Now, do we grow this business or do we grow our company? Do we look outside of our reservation? Do we do commercial gaming? Do we start buying hotels? Do we invest in casinos around the world? Or do we want to? Or do we want to have, like, I can talk about Mohegan. We have a pellet company, wood pellets. We have Coda, our copy machine, smart board company. We have multiple restaurants. You know, we have a holdings company that has so many things going on. You know, that's, tribes need to think about what their needs are. I mean, some tribes could not just go out and open restaurants and say, all right, this is going to supplement our education, because it's not that big of a number. But, you know, maybe if you open up 60 restaurants, it is. You know, think about where you want to go. You can only grow so much on the gaming side. You know, once the market is saturated and there's no more money to be made, you need to think about the 30 years and 40 years and, you know, 50 years out, like you said. That's hard. I mean, we've been open 20 years, and I can't believe where we are today. So I wish I had that crystal ball to say, where will we be in 20 years from now? But I can see us still being as great as we are in the casino. I can see us opening up places around the world. You know, that's where we're heading. We want to be a big name. We want to be one of the big boys. We want to be a giant in the gaming industry someday. That's our goal. But every tribe should think about what their needs are and base it on that.
Yeah, and like you said before, I mean, the future is very bright, because we have a lot of young leaders coming up that are now been educated and haven't had to go through all these things that the elders went through. They're on a different footing, right?
Yeah, and they, you know what, they're not all going to come back to gaming. We're going to have doctors, scientists, lawyers, teachers, athletes, mayors, governors, and guess what? Even a president someday.
Yeah. Yeah. Very well said. All right, let's take some questions here and see what people have to say. Hello, welcome to DG Radio. Do you have a question for Bruce?
Yeah, hey Bruce, hey Tino, this is Wayne from Exparature. How you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Hey, funny enough, I was just recently at Mohegan, just a couple of weeks ago, meeting with some of the marketing folks you guys have up there, and what a beautiful property. Congratulations, you guys really know how to do it. So you know, my question to you is on that marketing side. You know, I deal with a lot of different tribal organizations that, you know, are trying to modernize their marketing, and I'm just thinking, you know, after meeting with the team and what you guys do as far as bringing that one-to-one relationship through your marketing, are there lessons that you've learned being in such a competitive environment? You know, drawing from New York and Massachusetts and Rhode Island and all of that, that highly competitive market that, you know, that you would pass on to, you know, people that are just going from that, you know, batch and blast to, like you said, building that marketing, you know, conversation where you're, you know, you're building more of that one-to-one engagement.
Yeah, I guess the best lesson would be haste makes waste. I can tell you that. Like, take your time. You know, you need to really get your people out there to understand what your customer base wants. To assume you know something, it's not going to work. We're the only casino in the country that inside our casino we have a Asian casino. Now, we could have said, hey, let's build it this way, let's do this, let's do that, and maybe it would have never worked. But guess what we did was we brought in Cantonese, Chinese, Mandarin, some people from Philippines. We brought them all in and asked them, what would you like to see inside this casino if we built it? And they told us how to build it. We built it, and it's very successful. So take the time, reach out, find out what your customers want, and you know what? Use the information. Just don't file it.
Great. So would you suggest doing like a salic survey
ahead,
and that sort of thing would be helpful
well? Oh, yeah. Any surveys you can put out there, any focus groups you can put together. You know, you have a lot of clients that come through your facility. You know, pick out a different, you know, pick out some young, some old, some men, some women, you know, mix it up a little bit, get them in a room, you know, ask them about your property. They're going to tell you what's right and what's wrong.
Great advice.
Yeah, you got to know what they want. Wait, did you have another question?
No, that's great advice. It's just, it's good to know from a successful, you know, enterprise like Mohegan, exactly, you know, what they did well. And, you know, I think that's great advice to really understand your data and understand your people. So thank you.
No, you're welcome.
Hey, Wayne, you were recently up there. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your experience. What did you feel when you walked in?
It was just a friendly experience. Hey, by the way, I've been there a number of times over the years, but I haven't been there probably in the last 5 years. So this is my first time back in a while, and it's like it's absolutely brand new. It's like you said, there's always something new. Everything is meticulous. You know, there's nothing in disrepair. The rooms are absolutely gorgeous. But what really, for me, you know, makes it a place that I want to bring my wife to now, you know, when we can get some time off, is the fact that it's just an incredibly friendly place. From when you drive up to the valets, to the people at your, you know, at the check-in counter, to the dealers, everybody is looking to be helpful, and everybody has a smile on their face.
So do I right now. You got me smiling from ear to ear.
Hey, Wayne, one more thing. How did you see a difference from when you went there 5 years ago?
Well, one of the things I noticed is there's a construction going on, I was in one of the newer towers, and the rooms were even nicer than I remembered. But I think there's, what are you guys, building an expo center or something like that? So,
we are, yep, a large one. Yes, we are.
So you guys can do conventions and that sort of thing?
We've had conventions. We have a big convention center down by the Sky Casino. But the exhibition hall is something we didn't have. So we can do the boat shows, the larger car shows. We do a car show every year now, and now we're going to have so much room that we can have it all indoors.
Wow.
That's great.
That's incredible.
It's evolving.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, Just shoot us a line when you go there with your wife and let us know how your experience was.
Yeah.
I'll definitely be texting.
All right.
Thanks,
Wade.
All right, no problem. Take care.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, let's see what you got.
Yeah, I love it.
Hello, welcome to GT Radio. You have a question for Bruce?
Yeah, sure do. Bruce, can you tell us about your time when you were on the Undercover Boss TV show?
Oh, who's this?
We didn't touch on. No comment.
Well, that was a lot of fun, I can tell you. It's nerve-wracking, but you know what? It was 10 days of undercover. You're not allowed to speak with your family and speak to anybody, and you know, it's a very, very real show. I can tell you that. I know people always have their doubts about reality TV. There are no second takes on this show. It's a one-shot deal. You get out there, you make believe you're somebody, and you try to get all the information you can from your employees and find out how your business is doing, and then you reward them from there. And listen, when I was all done, I sat there just loved hearing from all the employees. They're trying to tell me, as Sam Chevron, Sam, if you want to win this contest, you need to run your business like they do here. This place is the best place I've ever worked, and they had no idea who I was. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is beautiful. This is what we built.
What were you disguised as? Did they have a disguise on you?
Or
what? How did that work?
Oh my God, I shaved. They shaved my head with a Bic razor, so I was bald. I had earrings, a goatee, tattoos. I was an old biker dude.
Wow.
I was scary looking. My own
That's
son
incredible.
Didn't even recognize me. My some executives
wow.
didn't know who I was. My son didn't know who I was when I walked up on him. Part of the TV show was me goofing on him. Asked him to meet me at a restaurant. He didn't know who I was.
Wow.
It was a great, great outfit.
So,
it was, you know what?
So that,
it was a great show.
You did that for 10 days?
Yeah, that's 10 days of filming, probably
wow.
20 hours a day of work, and then you get the
wow.
final product, the one-hour show, but it is real. I can tell whoever's listening, it is real. You don't get to, you have no say on what's going to be cut and put on the show or whatever. You sign that away, and you just pray that everything is good.
It's the real deal.
It is the real deal.
The real deal, yeah. Did you have another question for Bruce?
Well, when you walk into the property now, what's the first thing you do and what's the last thing you do?
When I walk in, I'm usually looking at the ground, looking to see how clean everything is. And once I get into the doors, as soon as I get in the doors, my eyes go up, but I just start looking up at the ceilings and I go, oh my God, look at this. This is beautiful. And then when I leave, guess what? I do the same thing. I'm always looking.
It sounds
I'm
like you sounds like you still have that same feeling from the day that it opened. You can't believe it.
Oh, yeah. I do. Listen, I go there with my girlfriend, Debbie, and she says, she's always mocking me. She's like, you're looking at everything all the time. I'm like, well, I'm in awe. I love this place, and I still look at it like it's just came up yesterday. And it's just so clean. I love seeing clean like that.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, right?
It does. I just, you know, it's a good question. I wonder what everybody else is doing when they walk in and they walk out. Hopefully, similar.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for
great. Thanks, Bruce. Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, this is GT Radio. You have a question for Bruce.
Hi, Bruce. How are you? Great call so far. I've enjoyed it. This is kind of a general question, but I know may not want to deal in hindsight, but what would you have done differently knowing what you know now, you know, for the last 30 years since, you know, Mohegan or, you know, all the tribal gaming started, you know, speaking to maybe when you had the monopoly or maybe a duopoly with Foxwoods there. And then, you know, maybe the downturn 2007 and then now where, you know, there's some more competition. Is there anything that you would have done differently as far as, you know, prepare yourself or, you know, if you could go back in the past and change something?
Well, great question. Thanks for calling in. There's not a whole lot we could have done different during that whole period. Everything that we did, we kind of felt the wave coming. So we were preparing, you know, we got ourselves ready for the 08 downturn in the economy. We got ourselves ready for the new markets when we heard they were coming. Before they even had legislation or put a shovel in the ground, we were changing our marketing plans. We were looking at 5 years, 6 years, 10 years down the road at what this new market would be doing to us. We modified everything, you know, and then we started looking outside of our region. Like, you know, let's go to Pennsylvania. Let's open up Pocono Downs. Let's you know, help a tribe out in Washington State build a Lani. Let's manage a casino down in Louisiana. Let's build something in Korea. So all those things are exactly what we should have been doing. And I don't think there's anything different that we could have done to change our business. I think we were so proactive that we spent months, maybe years sometimes, planning for all these changes to come. So we knew what wave was coming and when it was going to hit, and we were ready for it. So I don't think there's anything I would do different. Maybe grow my hair long again. That's about it.
I was going to ask you, what would you do maybe personally or professionally? Would you, you know, now that, you know, given the same question, but not to you specifically and not necessarily the tribe?
Yeah, you know, I did everything I could do, just like every other leader. You know, you put your best foot forward every day, you get involved with your business, you make decisions that won't make you popular, you make some that make you popular, and you deal with the downfall after that. But you know what? If you make the right decision for your business and for your people and for your state, and for everybody involved, there's you can go to bed at night and say, you know what, I'm okay. I did what I had to do, and I did the right thing.
Yeah, it sounds like you're
okay. Great.
You guys were looking out into the future quite a bit.
We are. You know, there's things that we are looking at. You know, the council that's there now, the chairman, they're looking at things 10 years down the road from now, and that's what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the survival. Did you have another question for Bruce?
Yeah, if you could talk a little bit, I know you just talked about the 10 years. What in, you know, in the shift of, you know, gaming versus non-gaming, can you talk a little bit more about what, you know, whether it's your tribe or general tribes are doing for, you know, diversification and, you know, maybe specifically to, you know, getting millennials to the gaming properties?
Right. So we have a couple things going on. We have our tribe diversifying into some things, and then the casino is expanding. So we have, you know, we're going to be in Korea someday. We're going to have a big billion-dollar project out there that we're going to be running and managing and owning with some other partners. We have things all around the country that we're doing. And those are things that some other tribes could be looking at doing too, you know, looking outside of your region. You know, don't put a casino in your backyard because then you're going to feed off yourself. You know, go far enough away where you're not going to hurt your business, and maybe you can market both of them and you know, get your customer base going back and forth from A to B. And then on the tribal side, you know, we have all these businesses that we're doing. We're very conscious about the money that's being made in the casino and reducing our debt and keeping the place the way it is. So we don't draw a lot of money from the business to the tribal government. So the tribal government has been ceded some money from the casino, and we've taken that money and invested in our, in ourselves, in the Coda business, and the wood pellets, and Smash Burgers, and Jersey Mike's, and Arugas, and on and on and on. We're doing all these things, but that's strictly on the tribal side, not making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, but making enough to keep some of our family working, keeping some money coming back, and growing the tribe on that side of it. So we have two things going on. And we can't, listen, the tribe cannot do things that the casino can do. There's a big difference in money there. But we're okay doing smaller things and let the casino do bigger things. And that's what a lot of tribes should be doing.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Bruce, we touched on something there which I wanted to talk a little bit about, and that is, you know, you said that there's initiative on both the casino end and the tribal end, right? What kind of initiatives are you see as opportunities for tribes to be safe in the future? What do you see?
Yeah, well, it depends on, you know, their structure. Like we've separated the two. You know, we keep them separate, and so the money that we have coming into the tribe from the casino, it covers a lot of our services and our building that we're in, our government center. But, you know, at some point, we are growing. Like I said, our numbers are growing in the tribe. Our education costs are going up. Health costs are always going up. And we needed to find a way, which I'm sure a lot of tribes are in the same situation. You need to find a way to generate more money without drawing so much out of your casino that you're going to run it into the ground. And that's that thin line of, you know, how far do you invest on the tribal side and where are you going to go on your casino side and how many millions of dollars can you invest and afford to do both? Maybe they can't, maybe you can't. And some tribes can, some tribes can't. Again, it goes back to the demand and what is needed for the tribe. Do you need hundreds of thousands of dollars per month, or do you need millions of dollars, depending on the size of your tribe? So I guess it's all based on the size of your tribe and your needs.
So it's almost like working backwards, figuring out what you need and then developing a strategy according to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's like on this board here at Tribal Council, we wear both hats. So we are the board of the casino, and we're also the tribal council for the tribe. So we're putting on one hat, and we know how much money can come up, and then we sit in our other chair and say, oh, boy, this is all we have. What are we going to do? And, you know, we figure it out, and we don't do it overnight. Like I said, haste makes waste. We don't make any decisions overnight. We can beat a dead horse to death 100 times over, but we do it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important thing. Excuse me. So, what with parting thought? Can you tell us a little bit? What is the single most important thing that tribes need to remember going into the future, and you know, overcoming all the things that they have to overcome in the years to come? You know, what is built longevity, and what is the most important thing from your perspective?
From my perspective, most important thing is remembering who you are, where you came from. You know, you have a long line of ancestors that have paved the way, that have made this journey that much easier. You know, they struggled, they fought, they suffered, they got us here. And it's like they put this in our hands, and, you know, we have it a little easier. We have to generate all this good stuff here to maintain our tribes, to keep us alive. So I would say, remember who you are, where you came from, and don't ever forget that. Because I'm a cultural guy. That is my world, and I'm about to get back into that world again here in the tribe. I'll be singing and dancing come beginning of December. I'm going right back to my roots, you know. But I'm available to do anything else if anybody wants me for anything.
Yeah, you're a talented man. Bruce, thanks for being on the show. It was very enlightening. And we'll hope to have you back sometime in the new year to hear about some of your new ventures. And thanks for sharing a lot about what you do.
All right, Tino, thanks for having me on the show. And thanks for calling in, everybody. It was a great show. You do a great job, T.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Have a good night. Have a good night.
Yeah. All right. That was really good. A lot of insight from a person who's done a lot in the last 25 years for his tribe. Next week, I have Michael Rudick. He's the GM of Palma Casino, another good friend. He has a lot of stories to tell. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just got to have time to listen. Thanks for all listening out there, and hope to see you. Actually, our next show is Monday, November 20th. We're doing a show before Thanksgiving. That's the show we're going to have Mike Lujic, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Monday. We'll see you all then. Ciao.